This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, welcome. George Stanekian along with Louise Taffer. During the next hour, we take a look at the ins and outs of Australian football with a range of different people, and you've lined up quite a few. We'll be crossing to Socceroo and Perth Glory winger Chris Economidis very, very shortly. We'll hear from The Age's Michael Lynch in the Journo segment coming up at about 5:15. Former Socceroo striker Konbutsianis will join us. During his NSL days, he played for a host of the best clubs in Australia. The reason FNR's reaching out to him today, it follows a discussion with Peter Katholis last week on the Pioneers, when he said Konbutsianis could teach our strikers a thing or two. So we'll talk to Peter about that, Con about that. And it just goes to show you that the Katholis, the cat, still thinks there's a great deal of talent out there, but we've just got to fine-tune it. What else? The Pioneers again, by the way, it's on again between 7 and 8. The two Gs, that is Katsanis and Danikian, will be speaking to, wait for it, Louise, not only a former player, not only a former referee, but a member of the Victoria Police Force, a sergeant no less, a guy called Ron Sinclair. And does he have a story or three to tell us? But right now, I think it's only right that I invite you, Miss Louise, to invite our first guest.
Good evening, George.
How are you? I'm fine. I'm pumped.
You are?
Yeah. Anytime we get to say yasu to a current Socceroo striker, I'm should be on top of the world. Is Chris Economidis here yet?
We're getting him. Getting
almost,
him on the line. Almost to you.
So
almost
you're going to ask him, I bet you in the next few minutes.
No, don't even start.
I reckon you're going to go,
George is going to ask
restaurants.
No, that's you. You're going to ask where his best cafe is. That's your favourite question.
I tell you what, the fishermen will never tell you the best fishing spot. They always keep that for themselves.
So they tell you
and
the second
I would
best.
Reckon Chris Economidis will not tell us the best coffee shop in Perth. There's no way. He'll keep that to himself so that when he goes, he doesn't have to wait an hour to get served.
Well,
do you reckon I'm right, or do you reckon Chris is a bit more open-minded than I am?
Maybe more open-minded because you don't live in Perth, so you won't be stealing the hot spots.
All right. I don't know. Northbridge, I can get around there. I know most of the good spots in that part of town.
When was the last time you went to Perth?
I was there about 3 years ago. So there you go.
And what do you make if Perth Glory hosts the final? It'll be at Optus Stadium.
Yeah, I'm not so chuffed about playing in a 60,000-seater unless we get 55,500 people, in which case I'll be very excited. I don't want to see 20,000 rock up to a game like that. If you can't fill it, I'd rather play where they play it right now, at NIB.
I agree with you. I think, though, for a final, they should be able to sell it out or near capacity.
And look, it may well be an ideal opportunity to prepare the boys because there are a couple of big games coming up just after the season finishes. I think they're playing your team.
Who's my team?
Manchester United.
Are they?
Yeah, they
are. In a friendly?
Of course they are.
I know.
Yes. It won't be the same in Perth. There'll be people flying in from Asia. There'll be people flying in from all over the country to basically see this rejuvenated Red Devils side with, will it be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or will there be another coach installed between the end of the season and the commencement of this tour?
No.
Are you convinced that Ole Gunnar has done enough?
Oh, most definitely.
I know Nick Debano is committed. I reckon Athos is focused, and they reckon that Ole Gunnar is the man to take the Devils to the next top two or three spots.
Are you sure? I don't think I've heard either of them say a good thing about Manchester United.
Well, you know, they're both very jealous boys. They're not going to tell you anything. They're going to keep it to themselves. But I'll be listening next time they're both on air, and I might even ring them and see if I can G them up. What do you think?
Well, I know Nick Debano is probably jealous because he goes for Wigan. And where are they? Not in the Prem.
No, but you know what? I nearly didn't recognise Nick Debano the other day. He looks like he's lost about 20 kilos. He needs to get on a grandma's cooking and get back to it. Someone who doesn't worry about where to go to have a good meal, and I bet you he doesn't do Uber, is the Perth Glory's young striker who's back from playing overseas, Chris Economidis. You should introduce him.
Chris, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yasu, mate, are you well?
Very well, Yasu. I'm very, very well. Loving life back here.
Now, listen, just before you came on board, I said to Louise jokingly, you know, good fishermen will never tell you the best fishing spots. So I reckon, yes, Chris Economy, this is not going to tell us the best coffee shop in Perth.
No, I can't. And I don't want to do free advertising either. So I'm going to keep those cards close to my chest.
You're a smart man.
But I have been around to a lot.
Mate, you're a smart man. I love it. Very good. Hey, what's it like working under Tony Popovich?
Oh, it's unreal. You know, I'm having my most enjoyable and most successful season so far in my career. So, you know, every day I come into work and just really loving it and wanting to work hard.
And Chris, what specifically has he motivated you to do better this season?
He's just, you know, even when I think I've had a good game, I've scored a couple of goals and, you know, we've won the match, he always pulls me into his office the next day and, you know, kind of tells me the things I need to work on and shows me little highlights of things that I can do better. And I think that kind of just grounds you and just makes you always want to get to that next level.
Speaking of grounding, we're talking to Chris Economidis, Perth Glory's young star and a Socceroo now, which is just fantastic. You're on a 3-year deal with Perth. You still got ambition to go overseas and play?
Yeah, you know, I want to reach the highest level I can in my playing career, but for the moment, I'm really just enjoying my football at Perth Glory and under Tony Popovich, the boss here. So, you know, one step at a time, and I just want to get as many games and goals and assists and you know, wins under my belt. And then I think the football just kind of takes you where you need to be.
And obviously you had a pretty grueling preseason. Do you think that that's really set you up for success?
Yeah, 100%. You know, if you look at all the stats and all the physical stats that we're coming up with, our team's only getting better now at the tail end of the season. So that's credit to just building a great foundation and working us boys hard, but also smart in pre-season.
Speaking of smart, there's a fantastic match that's coming up just after the season finishes with a team from overseas called Manchester United. Are you sort of gathering yourself for that?
Yeah, you know, it's
what an opportunity, huh?
A small club to play against, but people have heard of them. It'll be a great game, and it's great for football here in Perth and in Australia to have the biggest club in the world come down. So definitely looking forward to that one.
And I hear they'll be out for, you know, a bit over a week. That gives them an opportunity to sightsee, tour around Perth, and maybe you can even show some of the players how to hit a golf ball.
Yeah, I'll definitely show them. I've been working on my swing since I arrived in Perth, and, you know, I can definitely take them out for a quick game of golf.
Which course are you playing on?
I'm playing at one called Wembley.
Wembley?
That's my go-to.
Oh, aspirational moments there. My team, yeah, Tottenham Hotspur, plays at Wembley all the time, but I hear that the new Hotspur Stadium is just around the corner. Can you imagine playing in a stadium like that, state-of-the-art, on a surface that basically comes together with three mechanical lifts that put it all in one piece?
Yeah, that's like, it's a different level, isn't it? You know, the football over in England, the top, and I think every player dreams of going there and playing matches there. So, you know, maybe one day I could head to England. You never know with football.
Tell me something. There's a fantastic talent, a Spanish talent that plays for Glory. He might be 105 years of age, but he plays like a 20-year-old. And when he dazzles, he just is exhilarating. Do you get a chance to sit down and pick his brain and watch the technique?
Yeah, of course. You know, I've learned a lot of him since arriving here. But, you know, we always have fun banter. We always have a bit of a go at each other on the pitch as well in good spirits, because we both want the ball, we both want to dribble, but, you know, we both have that kind of competitiveness. So I learn a lot of him, and he's always good with me and teaching me new things. And, yeah, it's just good to have a guy like that in a similar position.
Chris Konomidis is talking to us on FNR. Louise will talk to him a bit more about the Red Devils. But what I want to know about, are you learning a little more Spanish than you imagined, or is he learning a little bit more English from you?
I think it's a bit of both, but I speak fluent Italian, so that kind of you kind of find a way to understand
there.
Each other.
Where did you learn the Italian?
I played in Italy I lived there for 5 years, so I had to kind of pick it up, sink or swim kind of stuff.
Mate, you are cosmopolitan magic.
That's it, man. That's how you have to be.
No, that's fantastic stuff. What's been the biggest highlight for you this year? Was it your arrival, basically, for the Socceroos and getting a goal?
Yeah, it was. Can't look past my playing in the Asian Cup with the Socceroos, and also just winning week in, week out with Perth Glory has been a pleasure. That last-minute winner against Melbourne Victory was also pretty special for me.
And did playing at the Asian Cup open your eyes up to, you know, the level that some of these Asian clubs have really gotten to?
Yeah, I think we all know that Asia's come a long way, and it's getting better. And I think, you know, there's leagues in Asia that are better than leagues in Europe, 100%. You look at the J-League, for example, and the kind of money that's behind that, and the big clubs and crowds they're getting. I don't think they're far behind some of the big European leagues as well.
That's an interesting perspective that you've offered up, Chris. People, you know, constantly complain about the A-League clubs not giving our youngsters a chance to get enough opportunities to play and showcase their talent. But that's one of the biggest criticisms of the J-League at the moment. Fabulous competitive competition it is, but the youngsters there are also struggling to find time to make an impact.
Yeah, but I think on the same hand, it's the club's a business, you know. They're running a business there. They're not handing out free rides for young players. If young players, they need to earn their chance, and they need to be professional. When they get given it, they need to grab it with both hands. You know, I think clubs don't specifically look to not play young players. They want to do the best for them. So, you know, I think especially in Australia, the young players kind of need to step up and stake their claim in football and kind of make an impact. And you know, I'm sure if you do that, then you won't find yourself lacking game time as well.
And Chris, let me ask you, are you enjoying the international break?
Yeah, you know, it's good and bad to not have a game on the weekend. I get a bit itchy when I'm not playing football, but the boss here is working us really hard. We're doing a few double sessions this week, so we're all going to be pumped and ready for the big game the following weekend.
Yeah, there is a big game. You've got it's Perth Glory up against Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. You know, we're getting closer and closer to the end of the season, and 3 points would be vital for us. So, in front of our home fans, to beat Victory again, it'll just be it'll be beautiful.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we wish you all the very best for the rest of the season, and look forward to chatting to you again sometime soon.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Fantastic. See, young guy, Chris Economidis from Perth Glory, and he says you've got to earn your way. You've got to stand up. When the opportunity presents itself, you've got to grab it with both hands. We saw young Daniel Azani do it. We've seen a number of others step up and showcase their wares. That's what they've got to do. They can't sit there and expect someone to give them a shirt and say, all right, it's time for you to get a run. No, 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 no. You've got to convince the coaching staff and the hierarchy that you are super hungry and you've got to go and do it.
I agree with you. And, you know, I come back to some comments that Adam Taggart and also Scott Jamieson made around the time that the Asian Cup squad was being picked.
Yep.
And, you know, there were all those discussions about who's the next bolter, who should be given a Socceroos jersey, blah, blah, blah. And both of them echoed the same thing. And they said when they were asked if they should, you know, be given an Australian cap, they said, well, no, you know, we've got to earn it.
That's right. Got to earn it. Speaking of earning it, there are three young guys who've just been announced that they're going to be part of the new Western Melbourne United group. Or they call it, what is it, Western United?
No, Melbourne.
No. Western, you want me to drop that Melbourne in, don't you? Pierius, the young boy Dylan from Melbourne City, is now going to United. We're also hearing, of course, that Apostolos
Stamatelopoulos.
I'm glad. Thank you that you're here to make it happen. And the third member is also someone that we know pretty well. He's made an impact. And
Seb Pasquale
came here, announced himself in a terrific game for Victory against Juventus, and then before we knew it, he'd gone.
He had
gone. He's back, or he's coming back, and importantly, he'll be there to really make a difference. I just wonder how the Melbourne Victory fans will be thinking when he rocks up in the green and black.
I have a question for you, though.
Go on.
He was at Ajax.
Yes.
Do you think it's wise for him to come back to the A-League?
He's not getting time. I think it's absolutely important. We just heard from Chris Economidis how important it was for him to come back, to feel wanted, and to be able to play week in, week out with some sensational talent. And look, he's flying. And someone else is flying, especially because his club's not doing too badly, is Michael Lynch, who joins us on the journos. Welcome, Michael.
Yeah, how are you doing, George? All right?
I'm doing okay. Answer Louise's question for a moment. Good or bad for Pasquale to come back?
Yeah, hard one. Probably better if he's going to come back and play regularly. I mean, he was in a good nursery, obviously. It doesn't get much better than that IX development system. So he'll come back. It's a good move if he plays regularly. If he sits on the bench or plays occasionally, no, it's not a good move. He should maybe, in those circumstances, maybe trying to find a lesser club than Ajax in Holland. But if he's staying, if he's going to come back and play and be a central part of Western United's midfield, yeah, decent move. But we won't know, will we, for 6 or 9 months?
Well, we'll know a little bit sooner than that because they'll be playing games around August, and that's not 9 months away. But it's getting closer and closer and closer. I got a chance to catch up the other weekend with Panayotis Kone. And now you talk about Honda being a really impressive unit in terms of ambassador, in terms of spokesman, statesman and footballer. Panayotis speaks six languages. He has a staff of 300. Yeah, yeah. He runs a couple of companies. One's a recycling company.
Oh, right. He's not a football-related staff. I thought you meant he was such a big deal in
no, he's
in
a smart cookie. He's a smart cookie.
All this stuff on that he had to have people looking after all his personal effects. This is like for a life beyond football, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, he's doing very well, thank you very much. And I asked him, what does he imagine and what does he expect from his time down under to play with Western United? And he said he wants to build a family of footballers who understand what their goal is and understands that only together can they make the transition from brand-new club to, you know, competitive club and one that's fighting for the title at the end of the season. I said to him, big goals. He said, well, why would you come down under if you don't have big goals?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a laudable ambition, isn't it?
Absolutely.
To be, you know, the main man for a new club that's just starting. And we wish him all the best and we have to hope that, you know, the club does really well too, you know, because if he does well, you think the club will probably go okay because he's the main man, the marquee signing, and he's going to have to deliver for them, isn't he?
And Lynchy, can you believe that Adelaide United have not re-signed Marco Kurz?
Well, I can believe it because it's fact, isn't it? You know, whether they're right to do so or not is the question that you must and your listeners must probably ask themselves. I think he's pretty stiff. He won the FA Cup for them.
But he's been a breath of fresh air too, Michael.
Well, I've always liked dealing with him, yeah. I've always found him a good coach to deal with when in this job, you talk to a lot of the opposition coaches generally after games, and if they're playing in Melbourne, they're not always winning. But he's always been a gentleman and very good at explaining what he's about and what the team's about. So yeah, I am a bit surprised, to be honest, but the club are going in a different direction and they've got new owners and new people involved. So I suppose they pay their money and they're entitled.
Yes, the proof will be in the pudding. Michael Lynch is our guest on FNR. It's the journo segment as he joins us each and every week. I'm just wondering, what's the biggest story of the week as far as you're concerned?
Well, it's been a sort of funny week, hasn't it?
Because, well, it's that international break will do it.
International break. Look, I do think, there's a couple of things, isn't there? I think the FFA decision to back Sheikh Salman politically is a very interesting story. It's not one that's met with an awful lot of support in most of the corridors of you can hear me. I'm on a train, actually. Could you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it. Michael, is the FFA being rather pragmatic here, supporting Sheikh Salman?
Well, I think if you're going to be generous to them, that's the only way you can look at it. I mean, this is a guy who's from the royal house of the country that was going to extradite Hakim, you know, and we all saw the kind of groundswell of support and the massive efforts made by the football family and the diplomatic family to get Hakim Al-Arabi freed from that jail in Thailand rather than extradited into the clutches of Sheikh Salman. So I think that's obviously a big story. And the Oli Roos, of course, playing tomorrow night against the KSK Honda coached Cambodian under-23s. I've just done a telephone conference with Graham Arnold, the Socceroos and Oli Roos coach, earlier this afternoon, and talking about the prospects there. And, you know, he's basically challenging his younger players to stand up and be counted and press yourselves for selection to the national team, the senior team, not just the under-23s. You know, he's pointing out that been a lot of retirements, a lot of people fallen by the wayside, and there's some gaps there, and there's obviously some gaps in the goal scoring and creative departments, aren't there? Because you know, Australia's really struggled to score goals and create much. So you'd look at Reno Piscopo, you'd look at Lachlan Wales, Riley McGree, Denis Jeanrot, these sorts of players to perhaps make an impact and force their case in those sort of positions during these three games against Cambodia, Chinese Taipei and South Korea. And, you know, they need to get results because they haven't qualified for an Olympic Games since 2008. And ironically, Graham Arnold was the last man who took them there to Beijing with a...
And that was Michael just holding up there. I think the cell has just passed through a tower.
I think it's
all
well
and good.
And
we might have lost him. Will he ring back? Let's find out.
Georgie, I think it's all well and good to say that they need to qualify for the Olympics when they don't even have the support of the A-League clubs.
Well, look, the club and country story has been one for a lifetime. And it's not just Australia. Wherever you've gone, I can remember a time when Craig Johnston wanted to play for Australia, the Socceroos, and was told very firmly by the powers that be at Liverpool, we pay your lifestyle, we pay for you to play football. What's Australia do for you? That was then, this is now. So, but I still imagine when you've got, you know, high hopes, and you just look at Klopp and every time there's an international break, all he wants is to make sure these players go and come back in one piece so that they continue their challenge for a title. So, look, I'm not going to take this line that the Australian clubs are against supporting our youngsters. Riley McGree, who's the captain of the Oli Roos, wants to be there. He believes it's important, and he believes that this camp that's been pulled together will help them enormously. 6 days together. If they didn't have these 6 days together, and I would have loved to have had 18 days with them, I'm sure, because you're building for something special. But 6 days together, a chance to find out who your teammate is.
Of course. Yeah. And more importantly, a chance to also get to know your coach.
Yep.
They've never played under Graham Arnold before. They need to
Sydney player, correct.
They need to get used to his expectations.
Yep.
And they also need to acclimatise, which sports science says it actually takes 7 days, right?
So yeah.
Graham Arnold hasn't just picked a team of A-League players.
No.
He's picked a team of internationals as well. Yeah, so you've got players who are coming from overseas from the snow, right? So
And I'm hoping that Jeanrot, who's had a terrific start to his season, is fit. Because remember, we did catch up with Von Schip, and he told us that the young man had come up with a problem that the sports medicine team at the time and while I couldn't identify properly. So I hope he's fit and I hope he can actually showcase all of his skills because, you know, as we've seen early in the season in Europe, he was doing wonderful things and a lot of people were looking going, wow, we didn't see that coming. Well, unless it was Louise Taffer, you've always been a Jeanrot fan, as you were with a host of the others.
That's exactly right.
So who else is up there who might startle some of the people when the time comes and the Ollie Roos stand up and make an announcement that they're here to play?
Well, I think that I haven't seen any of them play under Graham Arnold yet, so I'm going to reserve my judgment.
I don't want you sitting on the fence.
I'm not sitting on
the
fence.
What talent has enough going on in their makeup that they could really stand up and really surprise?
Just out of these Ollie Roos?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think? There's a whole new set of Ollie Roos I just discovered. No, from the ones that have been selected.
I think, as you say, Denny Genro, I think he would probably be one of the strongest, in my opinion. I also think that...
So he's been playing regularly. That was up until he got injured. He's been playing and being one of the best players each and every week for the club. And that's not a Mickey Mouse competition, the Eredivisie. So he's been doing very, very well.
It's not. And the only other one I would say is Rino Piscopo. So he's been over in Italy playing.
Okay.
And he's been playing regularly, getting 90 minutes each week. And that's crucial for me, to be playing in, you know, a good league around the world, getting regular game
confidence
time.
Confidence is key.
Contributing here and there.
Yep.
That's a really good thing.
Yep. So, as you guys know, when we started FNR, what is it, how many, nearly 18 months ago, 16 months ago, how difficult it was for you in the early days, how exciting it was for you, but also how difficult it was to maintain your focus, maintain your commitment and responsibilities, and actually learn the craft of broadcasting. What you do today is light years ahead of what you did, you know, 12, 13 months ago. Imagine as a footballer now, you're given the opportunity, bit nervous as hell in the opening days. You don't know your teammates. You don't know how far you can stretch. Are you quicker than the winger that's been showing you up in training? All of these things matter, especially game time. And this is why it's key for us. And Chris Economidis, I love that interview, because he said, come on, and it's about taking the opportunity, grabbing it with both hands and nailing your shirt to the mast and saying, I want to be part of the national team.
Well, that's exactly fantastic. Right. And I think that I agree with what he says, George, where he said that they have to earn it, because I also think that Australia, and I'm going to say it, you know, as black and white as I can, we are falling behind the rest of the world, okay? And I'll give you another example. So my younger brother is over in Argentina at the moment.
Yeah, but he's only there as a visitor.
He's on tour.
Yeah, he's just visiting. He's on a terrace, is having fun.
No, he's not. He played a game against Independiente. So they're in the Argentine Primera Division.
Yep,
they're coming eighth.
Yep.
Which is pretty good, because I think there are 30 teams or so.
Yep. And how old is your brother?
17.
Okay. So he's on that little cusp now. They're getting super excited about playing regularly.
There, yes. And he was playing against that club.
Yeah, Independiente.
He called me and said, I have never played a harder game in my life.
Well,
he said they were six, and they're not, you know, an awful, awful side.
No.
But he said they were 6-0 down in the first 45 minutes.
What was the final score?
6-0.
Oh, okay.
He said that he has never seen players with a better touch, with better technique, with better passing, with everything. They had
so
the whole
what works. Do you think he's going to do next time he comes back and starts to train here?
He just said that the level here is miles behind.
Yeah,
he said
but he's got to work harder.
3 times a day.
Would we train three? Would the PFA allow our players to train 3 times a day, do you think?
I'm not sure. Ask JD.
Yes, we'll have to ring Johnny Didilidze and say, hey, John, can the A-League clubs train our players 3 times a week? But 3 times a day, rather?
He said that the players that age, George, don't even go to school. He said football is obviously a way of life, and that's what I'm getting at. It's a cultural thing in other countries, whereas... Well,
Michael Lynch will tell you.
I don't think...
Lynchy, just listen. Yeah. You've been listening to this. Culturally, in that part of the world, it's a way of life and it's a way out of the ghetto, isn't it?
South America and
yes.
Africa and parts of Asia.
And we're playing in a first world country where everyone thinks it's an idea to play football. If you can, if you're pretty good, you'll do okay.
Well,
but over there,
I
it's life and death. That's the difference.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you're in the barrios in Argentina and Buenos Aires, or you're in the favelas outside of Rio, or in the shanty towns in Johannesburg or Cape Town, you know, or African cities, football is the route out, along with boxing. Boxing is another sport that always always, particularly in that Central and Central America, South America,
and the Philippines.
Asia, lighter, lighter men.
Yeah.
Where they're sort of 10 stone 7. What's that? About 70 kilos and less. The lighter weight division fighters are mainly from those kind of countries, and they're fantastic. But football is a much more universal way out than boxing, and it's culture. Now, as a parent, you're probably not going to say that abandoning all hope of school and betting everything on making it as a footballer at the age of 13 or 14 is probably not the kind of smart way to go, or at least we wouldn't see it that way here in our first world.
But, that's right.
But partly that's why we don't produce the players that they do. We have other priorities in life and other ways of looking at things, and you know, we take a more holistic view, but sometimes there are downsides, and by and large, football proficiency is probably going to be one of them.
You think of all the players who've made a difference for Australia, the ones who've stood out, and they're the ones that have been driven like nobody knew before. I mean, Craig Johnson was driven. He couldn't come home. He was super embarrassed. He didn't want to come back as a reject or as a failure. That drive can only take you one place. Yeah.
Well, if you've got the ability and you have the luck, drive on its own, George, isn't enough. But you do need talent, and talent is the cost of entry. Without talent, you won't even get through the door. But if you then ally that to drive, and you ally it to, if you like, luck, having a good game the right day when the right scout's watching, and you need a whole host of things. You need a good body, one that doesn't break down, or one that repairs quickly when it does break down. You need emotional intelligence to be able to fit into a team environment. You need emotional maturity as a young fellow to go away at 17, 18 to a foreign country and be able to cope with those demands. And, you know, I mean, I hear a lot said and done and written about younger people today, and a lot of people say they're not as mentally tough as their predecessors. I can't say that for sure. But what I do know is the guys in the past, Craig Johnson, Eddie Krencevich was a pioneer.
Yep.
Farina, Davey Mitchell, John Cosmina.
Timmy Cahill.
Timmy and going back into that. Graham Arnold as well, you know, going back into that time in the late 80s, early 90s.
Correct.
And that they were tough-minded people. And I think Harry Kewell obviously was, Brett Emerton, and to survive in those environments, you do need to be mentally very strong.
There's no doubt about that. Can you imagine Jackie Charlton said to Craig, basically, mate, go back to Australia because you can't play football. And he didn't listen to some sound advice, and he defied him, and he raised his game. I think the difference maker with him.
You're a 19-year-old striker, and you walk in that dressing room, and there's maybe 7 or 8 strikers on that club's books. And the first day you walk in there, they hate you, every one of them.
Oh yeah,
because you might take their place, and they're not going to help you.
You sound like you're in the newsroom at Channel 9 the day I walked in after leaving SBS.
Well,
that was like,
Channel 9.
Hello, the ethnic boy's Channel in town. What's he doing here?
Itself. Some of the newsrooms I've worked in as well, mate.
Well, you can imagine. You can only imagine.
What
did you make of the conference call with the Ollie Roos and with Graham Arnold?
Well, Arnie was talking about wanting these players to stand up, do the job against Cambodia, Chinese Taipei, and South Korea, and certainly South Korea are going to be a very much tougher option, you'd think, than Chinese Taipei. Cambodia, coached by KSK Honda, who's on furlough from his victory job, they'll be interesting. I saw a picture of the pitch in Phnom Penh; it looked pretty terrible, but that's par for the course. You know, when you go away from home, opposition teams make it as hard as they can for you, and I never understood why Australia doesn't do that, you know, when they're playing Eastern Middle East, go and play the game in the middle of winter in Tasmania.
Either that or in Darwin.
Oh, teams from Northern Europe play them in Darwin in the dry. But
can you imagine?
Conviziana's
joining us shortly. I'm going to ask him what was it like playing for the Socceroos when he played, and some of the things that he's learnt since leaving the game, and learning about the game in Spain, how they play it today.
Oh, well, it'd be a fascinating insight. I saw Con score direct from a corner for the Socceroos in that extraordinary game, the world record 32-0, when Archie Thompson scored 13 against Western Samoa.
And he probably meant it.
Oh, sorry, American Samoa.
Yeah, and he probably meant it.
Con probably did. I'm pretty sure it was that game. I'm pretty sure he scored from a corner in one of those games.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
Because I remember they took about 8 minutes to score the first goal, and then they got probably one every 70 seconds after that.
Can you imagine you're writing a report? No, did they just score then? I was looking down instead of looking up.
Oh, I mean, what can you say? I think I began my intro by saying, end this senseless slaughter now. if these were baby seals, the United Nations would have taken action.
Michael Lynch, thank you for joining us on FNR and helping us with the latest sports stories. What's the story for you in The Age this weekend?
Well, tomorrow the piece I've done is about the Ollie Roos. It'll be in tomorrow's paper, and just what Arnold wants them to do and why it's important for
Fantastic.
Them to step up and who might be in it. This weekend I'm actually heading to the Football Writers Festival in Jamboree. I'm a guest speaker and on the panel there.
That should be a bit of fun.
On one of the sessions. So the great and the not so great and good, like myself, will be gathered.
Well, have a great weekend. Is Francis going to be there as well?
I don't know, actually. Okay. I think I'm on a panel with Tom Smithies in the Daily Telegraph.
Well, that'll keep you guys busy. Thank you very much, Michael. Michael
Bye.
Lynch just catching up with us there after that short break. We've got a superstar joining us now, someone who played for the Socceroos, played for a host of clubs. Can you name the clubs that Combitsianis played for?
I can.
In the old
Off the
NSL?
Top of my head.
Go on.
He'll
tell us if you're wrong, by the
South
way.
South Melbourne.
Yeah.
Bentley Greens.
Yeah.
Heidelberg United.
Yeah.
And then he went and played for Perth Glory.
There you go. Let's see. Combitsianis, welcome to FNR.
Thank you, George. How are you?
Louise Taffer is with us, and she's just run off a list of your clubs. We were just talking to Michael Lynch, and he remembers you scoring for Australia direct from the corner in a game, I think, against Western Samoa.
Yeah, well, that's when Archie scored 13. Yeah, I was.
Did you mean it, Con?
I put it into an area, you know. I don't think the keeper made much of an effort, but I think I scored 3 from a corner, so I did okay in regards to that. But I don't think it was meant to go in this one, but anyway.
Now, listen, the reason I'm reaching out to you, and Louise and I discussed this before the program started, it all started from last week's The Pioneers with Peter Catholis. And Peter said to us, listen, there are fabulous, talented guys who've played this game who still have so much to offer the modern game. And I said, give us an idea. He said, Combitsianis, if a club was smart enough to bring him in as a coach, a specialist coach, to maybe take the strikers and give them an insight how to hit the ball. I said, are you telling me the strikers today can't hit the ball? He said, there are strikers today who will hit the ball 75% of the time where they want to. Con could do it 98% of the time. I said, hang on, Con might say 100% of the time. What is it, Con? How much work does it take to improve anybody these days? And how much fun would you have grabbing some young strikers? Say a Riley McGree at Melbourne City. Could you make him sharpen up that target system that he has?
Well, firstly, I mean, the thing is that most people just think it's just a shooting drill. It's not so much that it's a shooting drill. I specialise in biomechanics, which is a critical part of any movement in sport. And what I've done is created a system, a proper grading system, where I actually grade the players in a number of areas, not just shooting, it's, you know, in running and flexibility in a whole range of areas. And these all these things play a part in a professional footballer's life. Now, when it comes to shooting and executing, it's the most difficult. But as I've said before, I have to keep on saying it, it's the least practiced skill in football. And just because you're playing as a forward, it doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't know how to shoot. It's like saying that the tennis player doesn't know how to hit a ball. Or, you know, a basketball player only, you know, plays in the centre and he doesn't shoot. All basketballers learn how to shoot. And all soccer players or footballers should learn how to shoot. If they don't know how to shoot, that means they don't understand the technical side of the game. And we all talk about why we need to improve our technique, but I've yet to see any documentation on it. I've been working on it for 17 years straight. So can I help Riley? Yes. Can I help players? Can I help teams? Yes, to an enormous degree, because if a player doesn't understand how, for instance, spin works with a ball, then you don't get consistent results. And it's a big problem in Australian football, but it's also a big problem around the world, because there's only a handful of players around the world who actually earn the really big dollars, and they're the ones who put the ball in the back of the net, because it requires more skill. So I hope that answers your question, George.
Yeah, it does. Look, you've spent... Yeah. How many years have you spent in Spain recently?
Well, on and off, for the last 5 years, I've been visiting Spain and a numerous amount of other countries. I've also, you know, obviously I've been to England, and I've had clients in Croatia where I work on professional players, also work on, you know, obviously teenagers, and I work on starters. I think it's important that the expert coach starts the young kids as well, but there's also room for, you know, A-League players, professional players, international players for that matter, to improve. Because as you get to international level, or say A-League level and European level, Asian level, which is a high standard, I don't think the A-League is as high as the European level, but, you know, it's doing okay, that the best players in the world, like in any sport, continue to try and improve. But the problem is we tend to get the players just ready for games all the time. And there has to be an area of the week where the actual players can individualise and work on their weaknesses. Otherwise, there's no time to do it. And then you go through your career and you really haven't improved much.
And, Con, what did you learn from your time in Spain?
Well, look, I went to Spain off my own back. I didn't. I took a couple of my clients there. The whole idea about taking to Spain was about the methodology.
So did it change your thinking about the game, Con?
I think
he's just in a poor area. You're just cutting out.
George?
Yes. I got you now.
Yeah, that's good. So did it change your thinking about the game and how you were coaching?
I didn't change. It just made me more confident of what I was actually doing, because I actually did a coaching course there as well and spoke to some really intelligent people who are coaching the game. And the thing is, everything comes down to the execution. If teams can score goals, that encourages the team to do better and that they get confidence from doing that. If a team can't score goals, it's always a struggle for the team to win. And we assume that, you know, Lionel Messi's and your Ronaldo's are all blessed and born with this innate talent to score goals. Well, that's not true. And if you know these players, they've been practicing ever since a young kid, and they've been scoring goals their whole life because they're prepared to take shots. And they've learned this trade over many, many years. So it's not something that we just are born with again. It can be taught. I teach 8, 9-year-old kids, 10-year-old kids to kick with both feet fluently. The other thing is that kicking is a mechanical thing. Kicking is a repetitive thing. And our players don't spend enough time kicking on both sides of the body. Once they learn the different types of shots, it's like playing golf, for example, or tennis. There are different types of shots in golf and tennis. So if you can't play out of the sand or out of the bunker in golf, you can't play golf. You get caught there, you're not going to score well. Or if you can't putt, then, you know, you're not going to really win any tournaments in golf, are you?
Correct, correct.
So, hence the analogy is the same with football, that we really have to start concentrating on those areas. But to be a good shooter, we have to run with the ball correctly. We have to be able to control the ball perfectly. So, you know, how do we develop that first touch? Well, I created a system around that where you can actually create a great first touch, because everyone's perception of a first touch is a little bit distorted. You know, we have different opinions about it. But I've a lot of documentation on it. I have a lot of videos, a lot of examples of the work that I've done over the past 17 years. And I believe that, you know, that it's an area that everyone needs to improve on. It's just not the professional, the starters or the young kids. It's, you know, professionals as well.
We're talking to Kombatsianis on FNR, Evenings on FNR. Louise Taffer is with me. Very excited to talk to Connor about a whole host of things that he's been doing and what he can do for young strikers and for young footballers who want to make a difference. You can do it for men and women. But the thing that you touched on earlier, you said about the Messis of the world and the Ronaldos, and you talked about spin and understanding how it works. We saw from Ronaldo's some of his free kicks, you would see him actually kick the ball almost like you were playing snooker. He'd hit it. He'd hit the top of the ball, or he'd hit the bottom of the ball, or he'd hit the side of the ball to create a different swirl or spin to confound the keepers and the defenders. And that is that what you were talking about earlier, having to understand the difference and how it works?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that particular kick is a very low percentage kick, because if you had a reel of highlights of Ronaldo's Ronaldo scoring a goal like that in the past 2 years, you probably wouldn't have seen one. Generally, because you can't do it with a snooker ball, because the snooker ball is too heavy to do it. So the reason, having played volleyball at a very high level, the reason why this happens is when you hit the ball on the actual valve, the ball will actually lose some kind of air and it'll act like it's going towards the goalkeeper, and then it'll start to dip down at the last second, which creates a bit of confusion for the goalkeeper. It's very, very difficult to hit a knuckleball the way he does, but it is fairly inconsistent. It's great when you're further out from the goal, because it's got time for the ball to move, but even he wouldn't know exactly where the ball would be going most of the time, because there's too much movement in that. When it comes to a round ball, whether it's tennis, table tennis, golf, the ball spins in the same manner. The techniques are usually the same. It's just a little bit different because we're playing, obviously, a racket sport or using our feet. Using our feet is much more difficult because the signals that run from your brain to your feet take longer. But when it comes to hand-eye coordination, the signals run a little bit faster, which is important. You know, I've studied all those areas to figure out why these things happen and how we can create consistency in your crossing the ball, in your passing. It's not just the shooting, because if you're a good shooter, you would be a great passer, I can tell you that. Or your control would be good. You know, you're able to manipulate the ball with the outside of the foot, with the toe, with the inside of the foot. You can drive the ball with backspin, side spin, top spin. There's a lot of variations that I believe that we can educate our players with.
It's a wonder of the Graham Arnolds of the world. It's a wonder the Milicic's of the world. For example, Alan Stajic hasn't called you in and used what you've learnt over the lifetime and what you have, I suppose, fine-tuned over the last half a dozen years, because I think you're a resource that we need in the game, mate, and you need to get our strikers, both our men and our women, to be even sharper than they are. And Lord knows, can you imagine there's a Women's World Cup coming up? I wonder, how much could you do for Sam Kerr and Caitlin Ford, do you think, in the short time that you have? Could you get them up another 10%?
Look, I believe, you know, you can get them up fairly quickly. It does take a little bit of time. I had the pleasure of coaching Carly Lloyd, who is an American women's player. She's been, you know, the world's best player 2 years in her career. And, you know, I was doing the same work with her in the US.
Wow.
So, yeah, a lot of people may not know that. The thing is, there's improvement for everyone. That the thing, once you learn how to deliver those kicks or the different styles of shooting or kicking, then we start to work on the tactics of shooting. And that's critical. Depending on what situation you are in,
yep,
what position you are in, whether it's outside the box, inside the box, there may be one or two available shots. Obviously, like in when you're on the, you know, the putting green, you have to use the putter, of course. That's a small analogy. Or if the ball comes up high in tennis, then you smash the ball. So I think, I'd love to do some work with him. We just have to make him aware. And, you know, I know Ante, I played against Ante. I know most of them. I know Graham Arnold. They don't get enough time with the players, but I think it's something that the players have to look at investing their time to improve themselves. I think that's more important.
And Con, that's fascinating that you worked with Carly Lloyd. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, James Galanis has been her personal coach for many years. James is a personal friend of mine. He lived in Melbourne, went to America and started up his own coaching business in Universal Soccer Academy. He's one of the best coaches in America going around. He wanted me to specialise, work with Carly. I said, no problem. And look, the girl works hard. She puts an enormous amount of hours in. She's got a fantastic attitude. And I helped her, you know, and tweaked her kicking techniques and free kicks and corners. And, it helped her immensely because she started to understand exactly what she was doing. Because a lot of the players, actually, it doesn't matter what level, they could be doing something and doing it well, but they don't quite understand exactly how it works. So if they're to teach someone else how to do it, they wouldn't probably be able to do it. They just assume that everyone should know. And as we know, people differ.
Speaking of differing, before we let you go, I'm going to pose a question to you, and I want you to be as honest as you possibly can. Okay? It's a grand final. We've gone into extra time, and this is the penalty. You've got two penalties coming up, okay? And what I want you to do is tell me, you've had two penalties. You've taken one earlier in the game, okay?
Yep.
And there's one left. And the first time, you beat the goalkeeper. You're going to take a second penalty. You're going to go the same way or you're going to go the other way?
I'm going to figure out exactly which way I should go. It might not be the same way because these days it could be left, right or down the middle. So I probably wouldn't go the same way.
There you go.
That's the answer to your question.
You've heard it from one of the best exponents of a free kick and a penalty in the business, Con Boutsianis. Thank you, mate, for being available and thank you for reminding so many people what you do and what you can do. If I was involved with a football club today, I'd be saying, get on to Con Boutsianis, get him into the squad, talk to the youngsters and even the senior players, because you could remind them of a couple of things that maybe they've forgotten. Con Boutsianis, thank you for joining us on FNR. And Louise Taff is now going to go away and say, wow, he was coaching top-class women too.
No, I'm going to say...
I hope I haven't confused you, Louise. If you need any advice, give me a call.
Done.
No, that's what I want, George.
Oh, that's great.
I want Con to teach me how to shoot properly.
There you go. Well done. Thank you, Con. That's fantastic. Hey, listen, we've got a break coming up at 6 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, don't forget the Pioneers coming up.
How could I forget?
Yes, the two G's talking to Ron Sinclair, who's a ref, a footballer and a member of the Victoria Police Force. Sergeant Ron Sinclair, who's got a host of stories. And speaking of stories, 8 o'clock tonight, right after the Pioneers, Josh Parrish has promised me that he'll be joined by David Svetkovsky on the Lion's Den. A special episode this week. Ask me why, Louise.
Why?
Because Preston are gearing up for their season opener coming up Sunday, 3 o'clock. They're taking on Clifton Hill at Jenners Creek Stadium. They've got a couple of special guests to pump up all the fans. They've got young gun, the left back, Karl Baracevic, and they've got one of the defenders from the women's team, Amy Tegunlis. So a couple of special guests to join both Josh and David on the Lions Den. That's from 8 o'clock tonight on FNR, one of the many club shows that we have. And we've got a couple of new club shows joining us in the next couple of weeks. So stand by. If you're an administrator at one of the football clubs, wherever you are in Australia, and you'd like to be part of the Football Nation family, by all means, reach out to us and we'll have a chat to the team and see what we can make happen. Importantly, though, some great programming gave us an opportunity to talk to a guy who loves to score goals, Convertianus.
Fascinating, isn't it?
When he mentioned he was coaching one of the top female players in the world, your eyes lit up.
Well, because she's one of the best female players in the world. She's won the Ballon d'Or a couple of times.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So that's pretty remarkable. And
I'm going to watch her take a kick next time. I'll go, the Boutsianis technique is showing up.
It says that if Con is coaching Carly, why isn't he in the Matildas camp doing the same for the
he's got to be doing it.
He has to be. It's a must.
Absolutely.
It is a must. And, you know, I think you highlight a really good point. I think that if there are former Socceroos and former individuals who have played in the game that are doing wonderful things like this, we need to retain that for our future generations
to come. Franken, Mark Bosnich, whoever, whatever positions, I'm sure even if they came into the ground and we allowed the players to pick their brain. Can you imagine? If you're, for example, the Australian keeper who's playing for Brighton and Hove Albion, can you imagine Matty just sitting there, basically sitting down and having a half an hour on the pitch with a Bosnich and let Marco take a couple of penalties, take a couple of free kicks, or bring someone else, a Boutsianis, for example, to take the free kicks. And Mark could have said to him, I would have stood here, I wouldn't have stood there. This is the best way to reach up and take a corner. All those angles that they run changes the way you play the game.
It's invaluable. And I think that's what the game, unfortunately, has failed to do in recent times is actually document the history in terms of you've done a wonderful job, George.
Well, but actually George Katsanis is trying very much to do that each and every week with the Pioneers.
Bring the history back into the players now. Yeah, so, like Con, using their experience to teach the future generations what to do.
I'd be very wary, though, of letting George Katsanis anywhere near the current wingers playing for Australia because he has this penchant, this habit of wanting to nutmeg the fullback on the other side and then marvel at his work and go back and try and do it a second and third time instead of, you know, squaring the ball up and giving the oncoming striker a chance to head the ball into the back of the goals.
Crazy.
So, I know, what was Katsanis thinking when he was doing that? Just beggars belief. But I'm going to go back and pick his brain a little bit later on when we've got Ron Sinclair. Can you believe there's a story...
I spoke to Ron today.
Ron Sinclair, by the way, scored a hat-trick. And we might even be able, with the aid of some of the technology available to us at FNR, recreate some of those golden moments in the hat-trick.
That's exciting. I look forward to it.
If we can get away with it, it will be very exciting. There are two people that are absolutely essential in that. Athos Syrianis, he's got to press the right buttons at the right time. And you, because you've got to encourage him. He's got to get out of his comfort zone, Ron Sinclair.
And George, before we go.
Almost time up. What is it?
As I was saying, I spoke to a Ron today.
And? Who was it?
Ron Smith.
The grand old man of the game. He knows it very, very well. And he still loves it. Absolutely every element of it.
He does. And you know what? I don't think A-League clubs can whinge these days about the fact that the Olyroos are overseas.
No.
Because they've only got one or two players over there.
Yeah,
do you know how many he had at the time of the 2008 Olympics?
Go on.
6 to 7.
Wow.
And do you know what happened after that?
No.
Because he was in support of the Olyroos, he was sacked from Perth Glory.
Ouch.
And then do you know who picked him up?
No.
Graham Arnold told him to come and work with him for the Olyroos.
Oh. Little tag team wrestling there, see? Excellent stuff. Louise Taffer, thank you for joining us on Evenings on FNR. We're going to take an opportunity to allow the next program to run between 6 and 7. Then the two Gs join Ron Sinclair for what promises to be an exciting The Pioneers. And then, of course, don't forget Josh Parrish, along with David Svetkovsky, on the Lion's Den from 8 o'clock.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Football Nation Radio.